Black, you are my enemy, and I cannot get close to thee. Our life is ruled by enmity, and I can't weaken that. The only way that I can see is to hold you close to me. Love you for it's meant to be. I weaken your attack. Everything was looped and downy. What was good was up from under. Until black, that awful tender, came and popped my sense of wonder. All at once, all eyes on him, leaving me an unwatched body. Inside my body, black was decomposing quickly. This was found offensive to me.
And re-rendered it with such and you can take that to the bank. I'm the man who sings the songs you love, like your favorite whiskey song or the one about the gun. I'm the man who sings your favorite songs. I'm the bug and you've been bit. I'm the man who writes the country hits. Now me and my boys been coast to coast, bringing country music to the folks, and I guarantee it's been a load of fun. Don't ask me to sing someone else's song, the rodeo's here and soon we'll be gone. Just relax and enjoy the show. I could be your loving all night long, but you might not be my type, and there's bound to be a fight when your boyfriend hears you singing all my songs. I'm the man who writes the country hits. My words are solid gold, I'm sure that you've been told. I'm the man who writes the country hits. Don't ask me to quit. I'm the man who writes the country hits. I couldn't give a shit. The man who makes your panties wet, so show me your tits. I'm the man who writes the country hits. I'm the bug and you've been bit. I'm the man. The highlights in your hair are a dead giveaway. You're not singing country music. 100 desperate housewives at the meet and greet, just waiting to meet and cheat. You keep singing pop songs and taking photo ops. You're a sissy new age cowboy country fuck. Now you might take offense to what I've got to say. Well, I don't give a shit about your thoughts. You can take your entourage and stick it up your ass. The rodeo has got my back. The rodeo is here. The rodeo is here. The rodeo is here. The rodeo is here to kick your ass. The rodeo is here to kick some sense into your head. And when we're done, you'll wish that you were dead. Mind if we mess up your pretty face. Someone's got to put you in your place. If you don't like my attitude, then step right up and I'll give you a big fat you can suck. You keep singing pop songs and taking photo ops. You're a sissy new age cowboy country fuck. We'll be right back. Now me and my boys been coast to coast, bringing country music to the folks, and I guarantee it's been a load of fun. Don't ask me to sing someone else's song, the rodeo's here and soon we'll be gone. Just relax and enjoy the show. I could give you loving all night long, but you might not be my type, and there's bound to be a fight when your boyfriend hears you singing all my songs. I'm the man who writes the country hits. My words are solid gold, I'm sure that you've been told. I'm the man who writes the country hits. Don't ask me to quit. I'm the man who writes the country hits. I couldn't give it a shit. The man who makes your panties wet. So show me your dicks. I'm the man who writes the country hits. I'm the bug and you've been bit. I'm the man who writes the country hits.
Listening to the Funky Funky Show. And we're back with another episode of Fuck Everything, Fuck You with Sean and Timmy. Sean and I have been stuck in this hedge maze for like a week and a half now.
What does that mean?
Every time I go to sleep, I wake up and the maze has changed somehow. I found an apple tree. That's how I've been getting my nutrition. I don't know. There's three crows guarding a ruby, and I keep passing the same pirate skeleton all the time.
You're just talking about Nintendo right now, right?
I don't know, man. Hedge maze.
It's hard to tell sometimes whether it's Nintendo or DMT.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of the same.
I mean, life is kind of a hedge maze.
I mean, if you really want to find Zelda, there's a quick way.
I don't want to think about this hedge maze anymore.
You brought it up.
All right. Well, I got a plug. I got the punchline coming up Tuesday, February 2nd at 8 o'clock. It's $15. Come out and see me. It's my first real comedy club show. That'd be fantastic. Come say hello. I will say hi back and make awkward conversation with you. Sean, you got anything to plug?
Yeah, Timmy's going to be at the punchline. Whenever it was that he said that he was going to be there, I trust that he had the right date. So yeah. Go to that.
And, Sean's got his music. You just heard it. He's a Bloody Snowman, all one word. Everything's amazing that he does. Buy that shit and download it.
I do have one. I guess I have a couple plugs. I'm going to be playing Monsters of Love in a hidden location in Oakland. Monsters of Love is...
I thought that was in the woods.
No, that's Mutant Fest. Monsters of Love is a one time a year... kind of anti-Valentine's Day monster party, and I'll be playing that, and I think it's March 6th, which is a Saturday, and then I'll be playing somewhere in L.A. in the spring.
Wait, no, it'll be March 5th.
March 6th is actually a Sunday.
Okay, March 5th. Thank you. Thank you all for being aware of time and space. I'll be playing in L.A. sometime in the spring, hopefully with Abandoned Footwear, but definitely with Continues. Which is Dan from Babylands.
Oh, no shit. Continues will be there. I love those guys.
Well, he's the one that booked that shit, so yeah.
Dope.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to go say hi to Dan. Hope he remembers me.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to come to L.A.
Oh, fuck. You're going all the way to L.A.?
Yeah.
That's right.
I just found out a couple days ago.
Dude, good for you.
Good for me. That's all the plugging I have. I never plug shit, so at least I have something to plug.
Okay, so today's guest is one of my favorite people. She is the fantastic Pam Benjamin. She runs Mutiny Radio. She takes new comics with horrible jokes and develops them into funnier comics. And she runs a fuck ton of the shows in the city. And she is a fantastic, patient woman. And I would not be doing comedy today if it wasn't for her support. So I am very happy to have her as the guest on my show today. Before we get into it, why don't you tell us about this fantastic festival that you're putting on, Pam?
Well, Timmy's going to be at the Punchline on February 2nd at 8 o'clock. It's only $15. what are we talking about?
What day of the week is it?
Oh, yeah. It's a Tuesday, right?
Okay.
It's a Tuesday. It's Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I'm very, very good with time and space.
Okay, I'm not.
So the Mutiny Radio Comedy Festival is March 2nd through 6th, 2016. I don't know, I haven't counted the days right now, how many days to count down. I think we're at something like 36 days.
Right.
Something like that. It's either 37, it's between 34 and 37 days is how many days are left.
So you're pretty good with time and space.
Pretty good with time and space.
Like amazing.
I haven't nailed that number down only because I don't want to keep freaking myself out. I think that it's better to leave a little flux in there.
That's good.
Yeah, because I'm starting to have a nervous breakdown.
Well, you're putting a fuck ton of work into it. You're getting chairs and electrical and all this other stuff. And how did you get all these out-of-town comics to come in?
Well, I did this festival last year in Seattle in August called the Hilarious Comedy Festival. Applications are open until the 4th of the fourth month of the year, April. So definitely apply. It's their second annual. Well, I went to their first annual, and I had such a good time. Like, you know, the audiences weren't great, but it was like comedy summer camp, and it was everybody of what I consider to be a similar caliber of comedian to myself, and it was great to meet people who'd been doing comedy for 4, 6, 8, 11 years that were I felt like, oh, I'm in a playing field with these guys and ladies, and it was great to be acknowledged for a festival and have someone pick your video out and say, you're funny, I want you to come in. That isn't like a big, what big names are there from like San Francisco and, you know, Indiana and, you know, like, and I've got a guy from Georgia coming and South Carolina and Massachusetts, Michigan, Texas. And so it all started, I met all those people at that festival and I was like, I was really inspired and I thought, oh, you know, I could do this. And I kind of just worked off that Facebook group, and then I got onto like their message boards, and then I've been on the Northwestern one for a long time, so a lot of people up there knew me. So we have like 8 comics coming from Portland and 4 from Seattle, or just Washington in general, but only because I've sort of done that area a little bit, so I knew people. But it was all Facebook, man. Like, that was it. That's how I got everybody. And I had over 150 submissions from people all over the United States and beyond, internationally, and I had to whittle it down to 24, and then locally I had 60 people apply, and there were only 20 spaces. So there was interest, you know, from a comedian standpoint, I felt like. And, you know, we're just, the thing I learned from the other festival was that everything was great, and Patrick Higgins put it together, and he's actually a really great festival organizer, and everything worked, except they chose the wrong space. And the whole time at all the shows, I was like, that's so funny. I have the space. Like, because even this, they weren't having 40 seats, was like the theater anyways, even if it would have sold out, which didn't come close. It was just 40 seats, and I was like, but that's what's here. It's 40 seats. So I thought the rest of it is easy. We've got the microphone, the radio component's a cool part of it. Why don't, cause, and that's the thing that this makes us cool, is that we're bringing people from all over the United States and internationally, and their people there can listen to them live or can download the podcast after. And if we get smart enough and start monetizing our fucking podcasts, then we could actually, you know, make some money off the podcast, because people might be interested if their friend Brian Plum is coming from Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, he's going to do the live show for me and a separate one. We've been chatting a whole bunch online.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he seems like he gets around, man. I see him at some pretty big names
he's
across the
young
country.
And hungry.
Yeah, he seems like a good dude.
Yeah. And funny.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's all these people that are kind of, it's just, I've been doing comedy now for the 4.5 years, and I'm like, all right, you know, what else is there besides, where else, what else do we do? Where else do we go? Like, I'm not going to move to LA. I'm not going to go to San Francisco.
Yeah, fuck LA.
So then it's like, because it's just not me. I'm not ever going to wear makeup. I'm not going to show off my cute little bod, because I don't believe in that. And it bothers me when other female comedians just rely on them. They're like, well, if I show my tits and I've got wear the lipstick, put my hair up. And it's true. When I dress up, people pay attention to me more. It's true. Like, they just do. But it's not me. And I don't, it's cool, I'm still out. Nah, it's not me. So it's like, well, what could I do in San Francisco to establish something here? And, you know, whatever. So this is the home of new comedians. That's not so bad if it becomes a thing. That's a thing. Like, why can't that be a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think so far so good. I mean, it seems like it's getting a little bit of traction on Facebook. I'm excited to do the live show. I think we'll have a few people here. It'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna spring for like mimosas and beers for people to show up. Yeah.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Well, but and we have the. I mean, we're gonna have the green tent for people. Here's the thing. So if there isn't an audience, if all of my because promotion is so hard, and if all of the promotion fails objectively and nobody comes, we still have this cool green tent that the comedians can hang out in, and there'll be comedians here. It just means we don't make any money, right? But PBR is a sponsor, so the green tent for people that are in the festival, they're going to have a bouncer on the door. You got to be in the festival. We got all this beer donated. We're going to have food every night for the comedians. I've got these gift bags with like PBR swag and Alta California Botanicals and a super cool t-shirt that we're making and pieces of art, 2 pieces of art from local artists. They're making one for everybody. And what's the other gift bag thing? I have one other thing in the gift bag. I can't remember. But they get cool shit and like, you know, and then he's one of the artists, Phil Spittler. And then on Saturday at Brainwash, we got PBR to sponsor. We're having a show from 2 to 4, and it's free beer for everyone.
What?
Whoa.
Yes. because the PBR is sponsoring us, and he's like, and Jeff of Brainwash Cafe is another sponsor, and he's like, well, what can we do for you? And I'm like, I would like to have a comedy show on Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 so it doesn't interfere with anything True Hustle does, because but I want Tony Sparks to host it, which he agreed to do, because I want to give all these out-of-town comedians like the Brainwash feel.
Right,
you're like,
right,
here
right.
It is. This is a Brainwash show on a Saturday. But like, free beer for everybody, like, even if, so that's the thing. I'm like, I've set them up that if things here are terrible, we've got a party on Thursday night at Eagle SF where we're having a special comedy show at midnight hosted by Colin Holt. So, and there's going to be tons of people there, and they get like drink specials, and they're not going to have a door cover. It's going to be super fun. So it's going to be like party with the comedians and a big show, and then Saturday with the Brainwash thing. So I feel like even if people go like, nobody buys tickets for here, there's only like 5 people in a show or whatever, they're still going to be like, the green tent was amazing, and these parties, and like, and I'm giving them a comprehensive list of all of the open mics where they are everywhere, so that they can do everything while they're here for 5 days, because they've got a lot of time and there's tons of open mics. I'm encouraging them to come on Monday so they can hit those open mics. I'm going to hit them up with a list this month of everyone who's running showcases and try to like push them out to, you know, cheaper than therapy. Like, hey, Eloisa, here's the list of people. Or I'll tell them, this is Eloisa.
Right.
You know, yeah. Give her a video, hit her up. Because, I mean, they're all going to be here. Some of them should get, and they're really great. I mean, some of these people on the festivals are like, the guy coming from New York is like mind-blowing. Jamie Pierce, he's just super on it. And I don't know, I watched, it took me a long time to go through the videos, and I went through a lot of them multiple times, and I feel like I watch enough comedy to know what's good and what isn't, since I run, you know, 3 open mics a week. So
yeah.
I know.
And you're at every other open mic.
Where is this green tent going to be? It's a very good question, I think.
It's going to be located outside the building, because I can't have a green room. It's called a green tent because I want a green room.
But like on the sidewalk?
On the sidewalk, but I've got a pop-up tent, and it's 10 by 10, and I'm going to put blankets around it, and a little table in there, and a little with food and a little cooler with beers and some folding chairs, and it's where the comedians hang out before their sets. And
that's
they can
awesome.
Hang out all I have enough every night I get 5 cases.
Wow.
For the comedians for the green tent. But here's the thing. It's 5 shows in 25 days, and each show has at least 4 comics, because we have one host that does 10 minutes, and then we have 3 people that all do like 10 to 15 depending. And then some of the shows I have 4 people on, so that means they only get 10-minute sets, and the host only gets 7. But with those people, I've guaranteed them extra shows. So everyone's, and that's the other thing. So we went to the other festival. I got 3 sets, and they were all 78 minutes long. None of my sets will be less than 10 minutes here, and everybody gets at least 3. Some people are getting up to 5. And we have the outside shows as well. So it's like, you're getting a lot of stage time.
Yeah.
And it's on the radio, and it's podcast, so it's not just like... So I feel like, as a service to the comedians that are coming, this is going to be cool. I'm just hoping that San Francisco gives a fuck enough about comedy to come see.
Yeah, San Francisco, yeah. Give a fuck. Come to our festival, man.
That's a big undertaking for you to take on. Because, I mean, I don't know. Timmy and I both put on a lot of shows.
Yeah,
but not festivals.
Yeah, right? We never. Well, I mean,
or I guess the Strawberry Bacon was a festival, but
it was only one event.
Yeah,
but yeah.
But no, I mean, just the amount of planning and all the logistics involved is a lot more than I think most people realize.
Yeah, I know.
But when it's done
understand.
By, usually it's done by more than one.
Especially, I've never dealt with a sponsor.
Oh, I'm not trying to freak you out.
No, it's
but
okay.
You're
no,
fucked.
No. Well, I got the sponsors. The thing is, I started this at the end of September is when I realized I'm going to do this. And then I timed it all out, and I was like, you know, my entire month of November was like, look for get submissions, look at them, and find sponsors. Because I knew I had to lock the sponsors down before I started doing any of the publicity, because I had to have their logos and I had to know what they were giving me.
Yeah, the flyers look fantastic.
So, yeah, the flyers are really good.
Yeah, Subliminal SF is another company that is donating their time and abilities to all of our design work. They design the flyers. There's a poster coming out. They're doing the t-shirt. They do all, he does, it's Mikey from Subliminal SF. SubliminalSF.com. Go there now. The t-shirt that I have, that's the picture of the police.
For the listeners out there, Pam's actually a cartoon.
Yeah.
There's a, I have a t-shirt that it has a picture of the police on the front, like Sting and Stuart Copeland. And then underneath it, it says, fuck NWA. And that's one of his t-shirts. It's nice. One of Mikey's t-shirts.
So, I want that.
Yeah, he has it online. You can go to subliminalsf.com. But he has those t-shirts. So he's doing all of our design work, and he's rad. So, and all of this stuff is donation. I haven't put out a penny yet. The flyers were paid for by Alta California.
What?
Yeah, Alta California Botanicals, another sponsor that's paying for the t-shirts.
Generous
and the flyers.
Stoners.
Yeah, generous stoners.
Yeah.
I know, and they're putting stuff in the gift baskets for all the comics as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Free medicine.
Actually, our podcast is doing a live show. It'll be closing out the festival. Not closing out the festival, but on the day of the closing of the festival. That's Sunday, March 6th from 4 to 6. Come on down. I'll be springing for mimosas and beers. You can buy tickets online at www.universe.com/mutinyradio.fm. We'd love to see you. We're going to have a collection of like 8 or 9 guests that have previously been on the show, just kind of hopping on and off stage, and we're just going to have fun and fuck around. It's going to be really cool. I hope to see some of you guys there. Yeah, so we're really excited about that.
Just like Sketchfest, they do podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're our only podcast.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, we're like an actual podcast.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
We're the only podcast.
In the festival, yeah.
Oh, in the festival. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of them are all live shows.
We won't let you down unless we do.
You guys.
Okay, so I'm gonna do our segment break.
Cool.
And then we will go into some interview with Pam. And okay, so I know we're both from Danville, but you grew up in Danville?
I grew up in Danville.
Where were you born?
I was born in Lawrence Livermore Lab. I was born at Lawrence.
He created it at Test Tube.
Livermore Memorial Hospital. I'm a Livermoreian.
I was at Kaiser Walnut Creek.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. Tell me about being a kid in Danville.
Well, I was always afraid of the dead smashed frogs. We lived near a creek. And
Where'd you live?
In between Sycamore and Greenbrook. In between Sycamore and Greenbrook.
Okay, cool.
There was a strange little subdivision when you were in Sycamore and you went down this hill, and then there was this subdivision that was there in this really strange area, and the creek was there, and then you went around this big corner, and then all of a sudden you went up a hill, and then you were in Greenbrook. And that's where all the green thing, the parks were in the middle, and the
stuff. Oh, right, go up to that.
And I knew people that lived there.
Like, not quite Osage, but...
Right.
I know the park. I don't know the name of it.
So we were in this weird no man's land area of subdivision that was next to a creek, and, you know, I was always... The dead frogs were everywhere, and I couldn't... They freaked me out in the middle of the street, and I was a kid, and I'd go by on my, you know, a bicycle, and I'd have to put my hand on the side of my face, and dead frogs. And we'd go riding down by the creek, and all the little baby frogs would be out, and I'd be freaking out because I wouldn't want to smash the baby frogs with my bike. These are my childhood memories.
Is this Greenbrook, like, off Sycamore Valley Road?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Never been there. Never heard of it.
Yeah. So I went to Santa Monica Valley Christian. Well, first I went... In preschool, I was at the church at CPC, and then in kindergarten, I started at Santa Ramon Valley Christian Academy and in Danville, and then...
My little brother went there.
Really?
Yeah.
That was Little Kids Corral.
Yeah.
My parents moved me to another school because the teacher said I was masturbating in class.
Were you, Pam?
Probably.
Yes.
But I was 4. I was young when I started kindergarten. I was 4 and everybody else was 5. And I couldn't tie my shoes, but I could read. And
masturbate.
And the Christians were very Christian. And hot, apparently. And hot. Well, they made me feel really uncomfortable all the time because I was a chunky child. And my teacher would make fun of me in front of the other kids. And I have this... True story.
What'd she say?
So we had to memorize. I'm a very great memorizer. I don't know if you know this about me. I sort of have this sort of photographic memory thing. And I, even as a kid, I could memorize Bible verses, like, just boom, full passages, whatever. And we would memorize a very simple Bible verse, and you'd stand up in front of the class at the end of the week, say your Bible verse, and then you would get a tiny ice cream cone, like a tiny one. You know those little tiny, tiny ones with a tiny little scoop. And so I get up in front of the class, and I do my Bible verse just like everybody else. And then she hands me graham crackers.
What a bitch.
And I'm like, where's my ice cream cone? And she's like, fat little girls don't really get anywhere in the world, so I'm helping you by giving you graham crackers. Now, in retrospect, the graham crackers probably had more calories than the ice cream cone did. But she was calling me out. For some reason, this teacher had it out for me, and my mom knew it too. So then, but people in the school said, that's crazy. Why would they have it out for your kid? But I completely understand. It was this Christian school back in the day. I'm a creative kid who's a little bit out there, who can read when no one else could read. Like, sitting there going like, I know how to do this stuff, and they couldn't keep me. But I didn't have ADHD. I was very focused, and I wanted to please, and I always raised my hand, and I was trying to be good so hard. But how annoying must that be? Anyways, I must have pissed off Mrs. Mowers. So they put me in regular people school. What's it called? Poor people school. Public school. They put me in, I'm sorry, I'm from Danville.
That sounds awful.
Right? So they put me at,
Los Cerros?
No, that was junior high. This is in kindergarten. There's a mountain. There's Mount Diablo painted on it, and you drive by.
Charlotte?
No, that's the other junior high, Charlotte Wood. It was the kids' school.
Over by Green Book? Like off of...
Other direction.
With like the mural?
A big mural, but like El Diablo or something like
El Cerro.
That.
Oh,
okay.
El Cerro.
No, we went through that already.
We're almost at El Cerro Boulevard. It's in between.
Right. I know exactly what it looks like.
It's the Diablo area, but I don't know.
Come on, John. I know you know what it is.
I can't remember what it was called.
Was it the Black Hawk Movie Theater?
That was farther up. That was later.
Foster Freeze?
But
Carl's Jr. in San Ramon.
They put me there, and I was there for a while, and I thrived. And in first grade, I did really well, and the teacher liked me. And then they had me in a first and second grade combination class.
Were you still beaten off?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't beaten off in class anymore. I think I was just playing with myself because I was nervous. So they put me in the regular kids' school, and I was excelling, and I was in the first, second grader class, and then they put me in the second, third grader class, and as a second grader. And then my parents made the wise decision to put me back in fucking Christian school. So they put me back at SRVCA with the same group of kids that I was in when I was a kindergarten who didn't like me, and then they put me back. So my entire childhood was filled with Jesus loving me, but nobody else loving me. So Jesus loves me, be perfect, but everyone else hates you all the time until seventh grade. That's what it was like. I was with the same fucking people. Didn't get invited to the birthday parties. They're all rich little motherfuckers. They all lived up on that fucking hill, and their houses, their stables were bigger than my house, and they were all so rich and so fucking cunty, and they never invited me to their birthday parties. And every once in a while, because we were all at the church together, I'd get to go to their house, and I was like, oh, I'm at Jenny Smith's house. This is so amazing. I'm at Brianna Badain's house. How special I feel, because I'm a poor little...
Were you renter trash?
No.
Is that how you got to be... I was renter trash. I went to school with really rich kids, but I was like super poor.
I wish we were poor. We were. The problem was I thought we were poor, but we were really, really rich. My parents always owned their own house. We had everything we wanted. I just went when I was in high school, my 16th birthday, my parents bought me a car, but it was a Hyundai. And so everyone made fun of me because it wasn't a BMW. That's Danville.
Yeah.
So, and that's just the way I grew up. And it was awful. I was never good enough because I was never good enough for Jesus, and I was never good enough for everybody else. And I tried so hard, and I tried to get a 4.0, but everybody's blonder and prettier and cuter and a better cheerleader, and everybody's perfect. And 98% of the people from high school go to college, but like, oh, you only go to UC, he only got into UC San Diego. Ugh. Well, I got into Columbia and Berkeley and blah, blah, blah. It's like everything was constantly a competition in my youth, and I just never measured up.
You know what those fuckers did to me in fifth grade? I mouthed off in fifth grade. I don't remember what I said. Oh, yeah, I remember what I said. The teacher asked the question. She goes, the extra credit question for the history test was, who doesn't clap after the presidential speech? The answer was like the Congress or something, but I wrote on my test paraplegics. So She made an example of me in front of the whole class and then put me on garbage duty.
For being funny?
Yeah. So, well, because she had some war vet friends that were paraplegic. She started crying. It was a whole ordeal. Whatever.
She started crying. Whatever.
Yeah. So,
I hope she's dead.
Yeah. No. So this isn't even the bad part. I mean, I understand it was an asshole. So I'm in the hallway, like, because they put the trash cans outside the door at the end of every class, and I'm walking through the hallway with the janitor, the nicest man in the world. His name was Chuck. Totally cool guy. He was probably like my age now. He's probably like 35, 36. And a different teacher comes walking up, Mrs. Schroeder, and she takes one look at me, and I'm like, you know, tying the loop around the garbage can, and she's like, Mr. Pizza, you better get used to this, because you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life. You're going to be just like him, and points at the janitor, the nicest guy in the world. So he humiliates both of us, just like, and we're like, I'm like, what? Fuck you, bitch. I got a podcast now.
I was actually, I convinced the vice principal to let me be a custodial assistant my senior year in high school, which the only time you see a kid with the custodian is if they are in big trouble, and that's for like a day or like half a day or whatever. And I was with that dude for, you know, 2 quarters.
Wow.
So everyone thought that I was just a fucking, like, I killed cats or some shit. Like, they all thought I was a total psychopath. But the custodian would, like, he'd show me all the roof access points and stuff like that. And then he got fired, and I stopped being a custodial assistant, but I still knew all the roof access points.
So I would snipe kids.
No, I was straight up, throw garbage at the popular kids from the roof.
Awesome.
It was great.
He went to Monta Vista.
I was going
to
ask.
And they knew it was me.
I went
to Monta Vista for a couple years. Yeah. Yeah, it was awful.
What years were you? My brother went there. He was a piece of shit.
I graduated in 95.
Oh, okay. My brother graduated in 91, so he's
still a piece of shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I graduated in 92.
I was 98.
Okay.
De La Salle.
Yeah.
98, De La Salle.
Yeah, I lived in Danville, though, and then I moved to Concord the last 2 years of high school.
De La Salle.
Yeah.
We beat our butts in football every year.
We beat everybody in football. We recruited kids from all over the world that were just monsters.
Yeah,
I didn't grow up in that.
No, those kids weren't rich. They were poor as hell, but they paid for those kids to
come. Yeah, they got scholarships.
Yeah.
I knew some of those giant Frankenstein ass motherfuckers that got scholarships, but I mean, I met them.
Yeah.
I didn't last long in conversation.
Yeah.
But I didn't grow up in that area until I was like 10.
Oh, okay.
But I grew up in the mountains, so our education level was like about 6 months behind.
Oh.
And so when I got here, I was way advanced in reading, which is weird because I'm dyslexic, but I was in all the advanced reading things. But yeah, it took a bit to get caught up and got fucked with relentlessly for a little while, until one day I just picked a desk up and threw it across the room.
Nice.
And no one ever fucked with me again after that.
I have a very similar story. I have a very, very similar story. In third grade at SRVCA, it was presidential fitness time when you had to...
What makes fitness presidential?
You can do like 20 pull-ups.
Right,
and
you have to do pull-ups, and you have to do push-ups, and you have to... They do your stretching, and they do all this stuff. And I was really good at stretching because I did ballet and stuff, but I really didn't have any upper body strength. And again, at the time, I was still a little chunky. So we're supposed to hold on to this bar with your hands toward you instead of your wrists toward you. You had to have your front of your hands toward you. And they put us up on this really high bar, and you're supposed to hold it. And I mean, I didn't even last a second. And the whole group, I kept trying, and they're like, just give it up. And everybody's laughing at me, and it all sucked. And then we went back in the room to change into our regular clothes again. And all the girls kept laughing at me and being mean and calling me names. And I just couldn't take it. And I have the same feeling that I have sometimes in my life now, where I call everyone a cunt face, where I just couldn't see anything. And I ran out the door, I slammed the fucking door. And I went out the back, and I picked up a brick, and I threw it through the goddamn window.
Awesome.
Into the room where all the girls were.
Yeah.
And it hit these folding chairs. And it clamored and made all the stories. And I go, and I run back around into the room, and I like stand there, and all the girls are like freaking out. And then a little time later, a teacher comes in and goes, "What happened?" And I'm just standing there, and no one said anything.
Damn right.
And I was like, ho, 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 ho. and no one fucked with me really to my face ever again. I know people fucked me with me behind my back, and I knew that all the time that was happening.
Yeah.
But from that point on, they really didn't like fuck with me.
Yeah.
Because I threw a brick through a window.
Yeah. When when they know you're like you have some adrenaline that's under there.
Yeah.
Yeah. They leave you. I had the nickname Psycho for a while.
Oh yeah. No.
Called me Wacko.
In junior high, not in high school.
I did something similar. A couple of like two or three football players used to fuck with me all the time, constantly. It was always the three of them, and they like one time they put me in a garbage can, and another time they just they'd humiliate me in front of my friends, and then one of them was really mean one day, so I stalked and followed him for a while, and he went into like a room where they like store sports stuff, so there was nobody else around. So he was walking into the door, and I kicked him in the small of his back, and he like fell flat on his face, went into the room, shut the door and locked it, and I grabbed him by his shirt and like picked him up off the ground. I was like, I don't know who the fuck you think you are, but I will fucking kill you, blah blah blah. And this dude was like, I don't know, he was like huge football player guy, right. You know, and he was just terrified, like shaking and shivering because he didn't have his little entourage with him.
Sure.
Yeah, you let out the crazy.
Yeah,
and you're good. I mean, this guy could have mauled me to death, but yeah, no, I scared the living piss out of him. It was one of my growing points.
Yeah.
I felt the same way.
Yeah, yeah. It's empowering to fucking scare a rich person.
Well, yeah. I love that today's Fuck Everything, Fuck You is about fucking Danville in the fucking ass. Those fucking rich cunts. Have you been back there? It's
I get weirded
Disneyland.
Out. It's the only town that I freely weird. Litter.
I rarely actually.
I litter as much
I
as I can when I'm in Danville.
If my parents like want to take me to dinner the once bridges? Every couple months. No.
They Foz? Can afford that. You want to go to Foz?
They can afford a high-tech burrito. Like, they're not that rich.
Hey, Father Nature's shed. I got to do comedy at Father Nature.
What? Dude, do they still have the candy shop? Do they got the candy shop there
not
still?
Anymore, no, oh. Candy shop. Now it's a restaurant. It's a mediocre restaurant.
What?
I was bummed. I loved that candy shop. I went there all the time when I was a kid. The gummy rat. They used to have these gummy rats.
Yeah.
And I'd always be like, God, I want one of those. But I never got them. I'd always get the little balls that were chocolate that had the liqueur inside.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea why they would sell those to a child, but I think they had real
liquor. That was in Alamo, right?
No, it was in
I never went there.
It was walking distance from SRVCA. It was like you walked from the church down
it's next
across
to
the
vet's hall.
Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I used to play shows at the Vets Hall.
That was the Vets Hall was school. The first place a girl touched my dong.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's never been a girl touching your dong.
I think I went to one.
Just kidding. You get mad action. High five.
I went to go see some band, the Struggle Buggies.
I was in that band for a minute.
Yeah, you know who they are?
No, I mean, I played with them.
You were in that band?
No, I played like, no, I what I did is their guitar player quit.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, you want to fill in and or be our new guitar player? And I was like, okay. And I went to their rehearsal and they're like, you're too weird. And they wouldn't let me in.
They played a parking garage and I punched a guy in the head and broke my wrist.
Wait, was he in the band?
No. Some guy.
Oh, that would have been great.
No. So there was a dog pile, and some guy punched me, and then I freaked out and like paced around for like 20 minutes, and then I just punched him in the back of the head and ran away, and I broke my wrist. And one of the guys in the band found out about it, and they hand wrote me a letter. They asked me for my address, hand wrote me a letter with like a drawn picture. They like drew a neat picture, like one of the guys could draw. I might still have it somewhere.
Was it Avi, Scotty, or Derek?
Derek.
He's a nice dude.
Yeah, they were like, oh my God, we can't believe you broke your wrist in a fight at our show. But like, they played like a parking garage in Walnut Creek. Oh, like, I thought they were the coolest band ever. I saw them like five times when I was a kid. I'd have my mom drop me off, and I'd go see the Struggle Buggies.
They actually used to be like the butt of every band I was in's joke.
Oh, I can still
totally
see why.
I was great friends with them. I knew them, but like every band I was
dude,
ever
their shows
in, they're
were
like
packed, man.
Yeah, they were popular, but they were just playing like fucking rockabilly shit. Like all that was popular at the time.
Hey, man, it was about the music, man.
Yeah, it was all about the.
It was all about
crappy
the
music. No, we just
in Danville. No.
Yeah. Well, we have the Walnut Festival.
They would like
Devil Mountain Run.
Yo, tell us that story.
How I won the Devil Mountain Run.
Yeah, but the whole thing with your school and.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So, I ran track and cross country when I was in high school, because I'm better at singular sports. Anyways, I was on track cross country, and our coach was this guy named Jerry Garrity, and he was 36 at the time, and he kept professing, "I'm a virgin. I've never had sex." And he was very Christian and talked about it, and he liked to hang out with all the guys, you know, all the time and during the summers. Okay, anyways.
That's super creepy.
He's super creepy. Like shaving his legs all the time. I bike. I need to shave my legs because of the wind resistance. He's that.
You gotta bike off all that jizz.
So he and I never really got along. And I had two best friends. One of them I'm still best friends with. Her name is she was Katie Rowe then. Now she's Katie Fields. She's a doctor.
She's a nice lady.
Nice lady. She could run a 440 in like 54 seconds. Very, very fast.
No idea what that means.
It's one numbers. Lap. She's very, very, very fast in high school. And our other friend Julie Jenkins was a high jumper, and she could jump like 5'7", and she was this tiny little twig, and she was darling. And we had this track meet where we were like already ahead in points, Julie didn't really need to win this jump, and she'd already sort of won, and we knew it didn't matter was the point, but she was hurt, and the coach wanted her to jump again for this stupid reason, and I took offense with it. I was like, my friend is hurt, she's done enough, don't make her jump. She doesn't want to jump, don't make her jump. And he was like, she's gonna jump, she needs to learn the blah, blah. So I end up having like, it could have been turned into a fist fight if he would have turned it that way. But we fought in, there was this big track meet in front of both teams in the center of the track. And everyone could see and hear because we were both yelling really, really loudly at each other. And I was just adamant that my friend was not going to jump. And he was like, I am the coach of this team. You don't tell me what to do. From the outside, I'm sure people are like, what is this 36-year-old man yelling at this 17-year-old girl for? Like, what is this power struggle about? And really, it was about my friend. So anyways, he says, you're off the team. Get out of here. And I'm like, all right. And I get my shit and I go. And I'm like, all right, I'm off the team. So I decide that the Devil Mountain Run is coming up, which, as you know, it's a 6.2. It's a 10K race in Danville. It happens every year. And I'm 17, so I'm at, like, the top of my age range of, like, 14 to 17, right? That's my age group I'd be running in. And I say to myself, I'm going to win the fucking Devil Mountain Run because I'm a two-mile runner for track. That's, like, what I did. I was a long-distance runner across country, this thing. So I take it upon myself every day.
Does it actually go on the mountain?
No, it's all through downtown. It takes off, like, right at that center of the Safeway kind of thing. It goes out, and it goes through all the way around, like, Green
Brook, yeah.
All the way around, though, and then back through Sycamore.
Green
and all the way
Valley.
Back, Green Valley. Valley. And then all the way back through down and to Danville Boulevard and across. It's just a big, huge loop that's 6.2 miles. So what I decide to do is I devise my own workout thing, and it's a 2.5-mile run, and then it's to this hill that's like a 440, which is a fourth of a mile up. And then
wait, hold on one second. If there was one song that would be the Pam montage in the movie.
Oh, is it Smith's Never Give Up?
Okay.
Most people don't win to the Smiths, but I think you might be the exception.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that New Order? It's either New Order. I think it's New Order, actually.
I don't know.
It's one of them. Whatever.
It was
the time. It was like 1991, right? So I start training myself, and I go on this 2-mile run, and I get to the hill the first day, and I run up and down twice, and then I go on this other 3-mile run, and then the next day I do the same thing, but I go three times, and then I run the other way. And then I'm like, let's switch it up. So I go the back way. I run 0.8 miles first, and then I run up the hill four times, and then I do the other 2.2. So on this time, I keep seeing the track team running around. They're like, hey, Pam, what are you doing? I'm like, training. And they're like, for what? And I'm like, for myself, you know. So anyways, I finished this workout thing where at the end I run 2 miles and then I run up and down the hill 12 times, which is like 3 miles up and up the hill. So it's running up and walking down. So it's actually more than that, but I'm only counting the up part. And then I ran. Anyways, I'm fucking prepared for the goddamn race, you know, and I won. And I got to stand on stage and they gave me a medal and stuff. And they're like, what track team do you run for? And I'm like, I don't run for a team. They're like, you don't run for a track team? They're like, what school you go to? Santa Monica Valley. You don't run for their track team? I'm like, no. They're like, who do you run for? I'm like, myself.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then next year, my senior year, all the parents threatened to pull their girls off the team if he didn't let me back on. So
That's
he had
awesome.
To eat crow and put me back on the team.
That's awesome.
They were all like, we're all pulling our daughters.
You know, crow tastes a lot better than people make it out to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Okay, so
that's my story.
So after high school, did you do college or?
I did. I went straight to UC San Diego, and I got a degree in theater, and minor in dance and lit writing.